Blog Talk Radio.
Shut down, Cheddar. Blog Talk Radio.
Pretty much till they kick me out the booth, and we pretty much amazing.
What's up? What's up? Welcome in to another edition of Chi-Town Chatter with Matt Peck on Blog Talk Radio. Happy to have you with me tonight. You can also follow me on Twitter at MMP underscore DA. That's MMP underscore DAAA. Well, you can follow the Facebook page Chi-Town Chatter with Matt Peck on Instagram at Chi-Town Chatter. Subscribe to the Matt Peck YouTube channel for all of my sports videos and for all of my previous podcasts and content. Check out my website, www.chitownchatter.com. Chi-Town Chatter is brought to you by Benny's Beverage Depot. Remember, if you can't find it at Benny's, it's probably not worth drinking. Well, happy Leap Day. That's everything every Chicagoan wants, right? More February. News from Bears camp today. The team placed a franchise tag on wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey, and it was a tag of the non-exclusive variety, meaning that another team can still sign Alshon to an offer sheet, and the Bears could then match that. And if they were not to match that offer from another team, the Bears would, as compensation, get two first-round picks. The Bears can still sign Alshon to a long-term deal. They have until mid-July, I believe, to get that done if they so choose. But they'll likely wait to see what happens in the free agency period that's right around the corner. The Bears are very much so in the market for a couple of playmakers on the defensive side. If they manage to land one or two, it'll be interesting to see what kind of money they have left. They do have right around $60 million worth of cap space to play with. Alshon's tag is for $14.6 million, the average salary of the top five wide receivers in the NFL. So will they get a long-term deal done after their free agency period? And what will the team look like then? In hockey, the Blackhawks general manager Stan Bowman made a ton of moves over the weekend, and the new look got a win yesterday, beating the league-leading Washington Capitals 3-2 at the United Center. The Blackhawks leapfrogged the Dallas Stars and now have regained sole possession of first place in the Central Division by 1 point. We'll take a look at the deals Bowman made and the effect they'll have on Coach Joel Quenneville's lines down the stretch and into the playoffs. The Bulls got back to their losing ways following their three-game winning streak, losing to the Atlanta Hawks on the road Friday and losing at home to a red-hot Portland Trailblazers team on Saturday. What is the latest on Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler? Their injuries and their absences are really plaguing this Bulls team that just does not seem to have any life, clinging to its playoff life at the moment. And tonight we have to talk about Steph Curry. How could we not? Curry and the Warriors get an overtime win in dramatic fashion on the road against the Oklahoma City Thunder on Saturday. Easily the best game in the NBA we have seen so far this season. Hands down, this was one of the most entertaining basketball games I've watched in recent memory. With all the talk about Steph Curry and the Warriors coming into this game, retired players, ex-NBA coaches talking about the way the Warriors play, and they're a three-point shooting team, and will they or won't they break the Bulls' record of 72-10 set by MJ's squad in the 95-96 season? And is Steph Curry really all that great? And is he actually the best shooter that the NBA has ever seen? Who's right in this argument? Curry, the best shooter ever? Are the Warriors getting disrespected too much by these retired players and coaches? And should Bulls fans really care if they do go on to break that 72-10 record? That's all tonight. Open phone lines, 347-327-9183. We begin tonight with the Blackhawks. The NHL trade deadline was today, and GM Stan Bowman was a busy man over the weekend and actually made a few more minor deals earlier today. And when I say minor deals, these are all deals involving minor league players. The Blackhawks traded defenseman Dennis Robertson to the Carolina Hurricanes for goaltender Drew McIntyre. Also traded forward Corey Tropp to the Anaheim Ducks for forward Tim Jackman and a seventh-round draft pick. There were reports earlier before the deadline that the Blackhawks were also in pursuit still of Vancouver Canucks defenseman Dan Hamhuis. But apparently the Blackhawks were trying to move Brian Bickell and his bloated $4 million worth of cap hit in order to make that move happen, and there were no takers. And thus, there was no deal for Hamhuis. The consolation prize for not getting that top four defenseman Bowman was looking for was the precursor move that he made last Friday when the Blackhawks traded Rob Scuderi, who they had sent down to the minors, for LA Kings veteran defenseman Christian Ehrhoff, who also had been demoted to their minor league squad. Then there was more action on Friday night. After that swap of defensemen, Bowman got wingers Thomas Fleischmann and Dale Weiss from the Montreal Canadiens, and in doing so, relinquished center Philip Dano and a second-round draft pick in 2018. Now, both Fleischmann and Weiss are on contracts that end this season, just like Andrew Ladd, who the Blackhawks got back to their squad on Thursday. So that's three players that are essentially rentals for the rest of this season and for the playoff stretch. Clearly, this means that Stan Bowman is going for it this season. Here's Bowman on the moves he made bringing in those veteran forwards to add to the Blackhawks' scoring power.
Got a lot of young players that have shown good progress this year, and they've done a great job to get us to this point. And I think when you look at the task ahead, you know, with the playoff stretch, and you're hopefully going to be playing until June, so there's a lot of hockey to be played, and you can rely on some veteran players to do that. And that doesn't discount the young players that have grown this year, and we're going to need everybody down the stretch. But knowing that we have some veteran pieces that we added yesterday, it really makes you feel better.
That's Blackhawks GM Stan Bowman talking about the moves he made bringing in those forwards from Montreal, Fleischmann and Weiss, talking about the experience of having a veteran guy added to the Blackhawks team that has really been carried in stretches by a young team. The pieces that were lost last offseason, Sharp, Saad, Oduya, there were a lot of young guys that stepped up at various points throughout the season. First and foremost, Artemi Panarin, who is still one of the biggest stars on this team in his first season with the Hawks. But now it sounds like there some of the other younger role players for the Blackhawks will take a back seat to these newcomers because they bring perhaps a bit higher level of skill and experience for the playoff run. And it's a bummer for these young guys who have filled in adequately. And one of those being Philip Dano, who the team trades away. He was drafted by the Hawks in the first round in 2011, and he had really been playing well, basically filling the shoes of Marcus Kruger, who's been out most of this season with that wrist injury. And he was now another prospect that the Blackhawks had to relinquish to get the pieces Bowman wanted. They also sent away prospect Marco Dano in that trade to bring back Andrew Ladd. So add to that the draft pick that they surrendered to get Ladd, which was a first-round pick, and now also losing Dano and a second-round pick. That is pieces the Blackhawks won't have for the future. But their team, over the last 72 hours, got considerably better for March through June, the next three crucial months, in which the Blackhawks will try to become the first repeating Stanley Cup champion since the Red Wings did it in 1998. Bowman is all in on these moves. A little bit of background on Weiss and Fleischmann. These guys have had strong seasons with Montreal despite the team's struggles. Weiss, 14 goals, 12 assists. Fleischmann, 10 goals, 10 assists. Have spent a considerable amount of time playing on the same line. Add some serious firepower to the Blackhawks' bottom six. And if there's one person that is thrilled with these recent transactions, it's got to be Blackhawks youngster Teuvo Teravainen. All sorts of trade rumors around his name. Would the Blackhawks trade him, use him as a piece in one of the big trades Bowman was likely to make right at the trade deadline? because let's be honest, nobody wants to leave the Blackhawks.
Let me stay. Let me stay.
This team is not only, again, this season as defending cup champions, one of the best in the league, now with the best record in the Western Conference by a point, and just beat the team with the best record in the Eastern Conference, the Washington Capitals. It's also a very well-run organization and a franchise. Look at what Rocky Wirtz and Stan Bowman and the whole crew have been able to do with this bordering on dynasty of three cups in 7 years. Three cups in 6 years, trying for four in seven. Nobody wants to be that prospect piece that gets moved, like, unfortunately, Philip Deneau. And Tabo could have been one of those pieces, but Bowman managed to keep him. And he must have liked what he saw and has faith in Teuvo Teravainen being a big piece of this team moving forward. Surely a great display of confidence in Teuvo that he was not traded. And now the general belief here in Chicago, from what we've heard, what we've read, is that Teuvo will now, he's bounced around a lot on different lines, playing wing sometime, playing center sometime. Now the majority belief is that Teuvo will anchor the third line as its center and play opposite the two new guys Bowman just brought in Friday, Fleischman and Weiss. And Teuvo has had some strong games recently. He's got a goal and three assists in his last five games, including a primus on a Jonathan Toews power play goal last night, gave the Blackhawks the lead. And the captain talked about Tavo's strong play recently.
I think he's really, gaining confidence every single night, and I think that happens when you score a couple goals and get the results you've been looking for. And it doesn't matter how hard you work or how hard you prepare. Sometimes it's nice to get some bounces here and there, and he's been getting that lately. So I think our units move the puck pretty well. So it's nice to have two power play units that are going and generating tonight. So nice little play. Felt good to finish that one off.
That's Blackhawks captain Jonathan Toews talking about his young buddy, Teuvo Teravainen, who gave him a beauty of an assist yesterday in their win over Washington. A vote of confidence from Stan Bowman to not be traded. A vote of confidence from his captain, who are expecting big things from Teravainen down the stretch. And he yesterday seemed to already have, miraculously, somehow, some really strong chemistry with Fleischman, who just arrived from Montreal. The two had several very strong shifts together. None resulted in goals for either of the two, but it was as if they were just hitting it off, getting off on the right foot, just as if they were meeting for the first time and deciding that they liked the same things, did the same things, said the same things.
You must be Andy Bernard. Aloha and welcome. And you must be Michael Scott. Aloha and hello. Oh, very good. We have a bag of nifty gifties for you.
Nifty!
They are nifty. They're nifty gifties.
You know who I really like? Is this guy, Andy Bernard. He has got this very likable way about him.
Teuvo and Fleischman, yesterday, in their first game together, already appeared to be two peas in a pod. Strong give and take, strong play, generating a good amount of pressure. And they'll be playing together, likely, on that third line. Also making an immediate impact yesterday was Andrew Ladd making his triumphant return, got a great ovation from the United Center crowd yesterday, and he played with Jonathan Toews, as expected, on that top line. He got a secondary assist on Taser's goal, and he spoke after the game about what it is like playing with Jonathan Toews again.
It's great because he's so good on faceoffs. A lot of time you're starting with the puck, and that's such a big aspect of the game, and then he's just responsible in every aspect and always seems to be in the right spot. So I think as we go, hopefully get a chance to play for a while together and start to really read off each other.
That's Andrew Ladd after yesterday's win over the Capitals, talking about his captain, Jonathan Toews. The two clearly picked up right where they left off.
Jenny and me was just like peas and carrots. showed me around and even introduced me to some of her new friends.
There are some new faces in that Blackhawks locker room since Andrew Ladd left the club in the offseason following the Stanley Cup win in 2010. Andrew Shaw, Tavo, Trevor Van Riemsdyk, Rasmussen, Gustafson, Desjardins, Machinter, Panik, Roosevelt. There are a lot of new faces, but luckily for Ladd, the most important names are all still there. Taves, Kane, Hossa, Seabrook, Keith, Chalmerson will be just like old times for Ladd back in Chicago. Good news for him, great news for the Blackhawks. Now, with all of these faces, both new and old, some returning, some in Chicago for the first time, head coach Joel Quenneville, well, he needs to think about what he wants to do with his lines.
When you're missing some pieces, yeah, you're probably looking, well, we'll try this along the way. And when everybody gets back, you kind of got an idea of what you really want to do. And then you might not even get that chance if you like the way things are going.
Joel Quenneville has really had to plug and play a number of guys this season. Some of the younger guys that Stan Bowman was referring to when talking about the nice job done by some of the young guys on the squad, but wanting to bring in some more experienced players for the final push. And you heard Coach Q mention, I mean, when we get some guys back, we'll have to mix some things around a bit more and see what we like. And heck, if I find something I like in the meantime, while I'm plugging and playing everyone in every which way, maybe we'll stick with it. And Coach Q, I mean, he's not against playing with his lineups even in the playoffs. We saw that during this run to the cup last season. But tentatively, you can look at it like this. If he makes the sort of, not obvious, but the most logical choice, looking at his 12 in his rotation, first line, as expected, he's going to put Andrew Ladd in that left wing spot that was the glaring hole vacated by Brandon Saad in the offseason. Left wing Saad, center, Taves. Right wing, Marian Hossa, who is one of those guys the Blackhawks are waiting on to make a return from injury. Second line, obviously, don't touch it. It's amazing. Panarin, Anisimov, and Kane. Now, third line becomes Fleischman, Tavo at center, and Weiss. And Weiss and Fleischman have some chemistry from playing in Montreal on the same line. And Tavo looked to be right on the same page with Fleischman yesterday. Weiss... Excuse me. Weiss is still not with the team, dealing with a issue with his work visa. But he is expected to join the club in the near future. So those three will be on the third line. And then fourth line, which has been just a hodgepodge of whoever's available for Coach Q most of this season, could now become Andrew Shaw, Marcus Kruger, who's still expected to make his return from injury in time for the playoffs, and Andrew Desjardins. And those three spent considerable time playing with one another on that line last year. And that's really, if you think about it, that is a line with three centers. Shaw and Desjardins will probably play the wing. Maybe Coach Q will give Kruger some time on his way back before throwing him in at center. But those are three centers. You can switch around if you like. But those three are a great fourth line. Defensively, penalty kill, scrappy offense can really tire out their opponent's defense. You look at those four lines and the Blackhawks, that's a pretty formidable 12 guys. Now, the defense is still likely to be a question. Brent Seabrook has had a pretty rough year statistically. Looks like he's perhaps lost a step. Christian Ehrhoff, who came over in the trade from L.A. on Friday, he's not a top-four caliber guy, 33-year-old veteran who was waived by the Kings. And then you have Michael Roosevelt, who's 80 billion years old, doing what he can, giving you the minutes on the ice he can. And then the young guys, Trevor Van Riemsdyk, young, inexperienced. Same with Gustafson. But the moves for Ladd and Fleisch, who I guess the team has already started calling Flash, everybody in the Hawks locker room needs a nickname. Ladd, Fleisch, and Weiss. Those three moves that Stan Bowman made are all signs that gun for the cup. It's a few months away. You sacrifice your prospects, Marco Dano, Philip Deneau, a first-round pick, a second-round pick. Bowman gave up a lot of future pieces, but he got some pretty great players for the next 3 months. That's really the only option for the Blackhawks right now.
Well, then I guess there's only one thing left to do. Win the whole thing. Yeah.
And just a note about yesterday's game, how entertaining was that? The back and forth action between the Blackhawks and Capitals. Caps got most of the good looks in the first period. I think they outshot the Blackhawks 14-5 in the first. Then the Blackhawks respond with a strong second, and then really all of the third period is back and forth. Power plays, penalty kills. Good action on both sides. Great tending from both Braden Holtby and Corey Crawford. These are two teams that are skilled, and they are fast.
That was fast.
The Capitals are the best team in the Eastern Conference. You can say that pretty easily. They're technically, based on their record, the best team in hockey, although you can make the argument that the Blackhawks yesterday proved that's not true. But both teams are fast and skilled. I mean, and look at all of the talent that the Capitals have. Obviously, Alexander Ovechkin, who leads the league with 40 goals, leapfrogged Kaner a week or so ago. Nicklas Backstrom, Justin Williams, Yevgeny Kuznetsov. And I mentioned their goaltender, Braden Holtby, is rivaling Crawford as perhaps the best goaltender in hockey this season. He leads the NHL with 39 wins. Crawford is in second with 33. Could we have just seen a Stanley Cup Finals preview yesterday? It's very, very possible. The question is, can the Blackhawks get past what is a very deep and difficult Western Conference? And will the Capitals do what they usually do when they get to the playoffs? And, well, seems in recent seasons, despite how good they are in those first 82 games, when it comes to those best-of-seven series, the Capitals just fold, crumble. Now, part of me is amused that that is always the case with the Capitals. It's like, oh, yeah, of course the Capitals lost their first-round series as a top-four seed. You can always count on that. And it's amusing. But this time, I don't know. Could be pretty entertaining. That was a great hockey game yesterday, and I certainly wouldn't mind a best-of-seven series between the Hawks and the Caps. Still a lot of time before we figure out who will be in that East-West showdown. Will the Hawks be there defending the Cup? Will the Capitals finally figure out what has been killing them in the playoffs and make it all the way there? Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some Bulls. Two more losses. What is the status of the missing backcourt duo of Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler? 347-327-9183 is the number. You're listening to Chi-Town Chatter with Matt Peck on Blog Talk Radio. Stick around.
I'll be right back. Don't you go dying on me.
I love you.
Oh, that's so nice.
I made these for you. They're just brownies.
Could I have one?
Go ahead.
No.
What? You don't like brownies?
No.
I'm sorry, I can't understand you.
No.
Mick?
No.
You're seeing someone else.
No.
A guy named Mick.
No.
I can't believe it.
No.
Hey, my name is Scott.
No.
Hey, Scott, look, I gotta go. I hope Mick likes brownies.
Got milk. Brought to you by America's Dairy Farmers.
Nothing's funny about gout flares. Though they can make you walk funny, or sport that hilarious open-toed sneaker of yours. Those are serious attempts to live with gout flares. But why live with them? Visit gout.com and find better ways to fight flares over time.
Budweiser commercial featuring the Kruka.
Where there's life, there's fun. At a concert or a show in your own backyard, wherever. is here is for folks to know it's life. There's Budweiser.
This for everybody feeling good. You know who you are, or you misunderstood. Never had money, or you're living good. If you're from the burbs, if you're in the hood, recognize where we come from. In my day, man, I did a little something.
Welcome back to Chi-Town Chatter on Blog Talk Radio. Matt Peck here with you Monday evening with open phone lines 347-327-9183. Well, after their little three-game winning streak that had some people excited here in Chicago, the Bulls fell back to being their normal, pathetic selves over the weekend. Embarrassing effort in their road loss to the Hawks on Friday, in which the team played no defense. And again, just a total kryptonite, the Atlanta Hawks. 20-plus turnovers that led to 27 Hawks points. The Bulls have been averaging 20 turnovers a game against Atlanta this season in their three games. Really, between that and the bad defense, the Bulls did not have a prayer. They didn't really seem to come out with any energy against the Hawks Friday night. Saturday was a different story. The Bulls were doing what they could to move the ball, playing with some level of energy as opposed to none, but they just couldn't make enough shots. And they were up against a red-hot Portland Trailblazers team, which has, including a win over the Pacers last night, now won 13 of their last 15 games. But despite the loss against Portland, Hoiberg liked what he saw.
I thought we battled. You know, I thought we played the right way. It showed with our movement, with our assists. And, you know, we missed a lot of open shots as well. I had 33 assists on 39 field goals. You know, it's showing you're playing the right way offensively. Defensively, you know, we got back in the game. And then couldn't get that big one when we really needed it. We cut that thing all the way down, manageable number, just couldn't get over the hump.
That's Bulls coach Fred Hoiberg after the loss to Portland on Saturday. You heard him mention the 33 assists on 39 baskets, and that is good ball movement. That is certainly a sign of that. Just misses. Bulls not getting enough offensively. Aaron Brooks, 2 for 7. Tony Snell, scoreless, 0 of 5 from the field. And the defense just couldn't get enough stops. Damian Lillard had his way with the defense, scoring 31 points. And they had strong contributions from their bench as well. Now, what exactly, if I may journey back, what did I say coming into that game against the Hawks when the Bulls were riding a three-game winning streak? What did I say? What I said to any Bulls fans out there who are getting excited with this little three-game winning streak is hold your horses and look at the big picture. The Bulls shooters were shooting well, and they haven't been shooting well all season. In that six-game winning streak they had back in what I guess it was December or January, feels like a year ago, they were shooting the ball very well. Shot 50% from the field in all three of those wins just last week. But when the shooters cool down and there is still no defense to fall back on, this team loses. This team is not good. Now, Doug McDermott had another strong game with 18 points off the bench. Pau Gasol had his first triple-double as a Bull, posting a magnificent line, 22 points, 16 boards, 14 assists, career high, but it wasn't enough. There is no room for error for the Bulls right now. And when they can't get a stop defensively, you heard Hoiberg mention it just now. When the shots aren't falling, you need to get stops. And what did I say coming into this game against Atlanta on Friday? Don't get your hopes up with this little three-game winning streak. This isn't the same nitty-gritty Bulls team that can go out there and get shorthanded wins because of their defense. It was a nice shorthanded win they had against Washington, their third straight win. But it was not of the defensive variety They gave up 100-plus to Atlanta and Portland. No surprises there. That's 13 straight games that the Bulls defense has given up 100 or more points, which I'm pretty sure has got to be some kind of franchise record. When the shooters go cold, the defense is still bad, and the Bulls are still bad. That is what I said on Friday coming into their game against Atlanta. I predicted an ugly loss. That's what happened. The same thing happened against Portland. Sure, they tried. They moved the ball better. They didn't have as many egregious, ungodly turnovers, but they still weren't on top of their game. They didn't play their best. They missed open shots, and they still didn't play defense. It's the same formula all season long. When the Bulls get wins, it's because they can outscore their opponent. That's all it is. And there is no room for error right now. These injuries to two of their top guys, four of their top six or seven guys, it's a lot to deal with.
You can't really dwell on it and, you know, be frustrated or think about it every day. Oh, we wish, you know, certain guys would be back and we wish things were a little different, but they're not. So you just got to go out there and do your best.
It's tough having guys out for sure. You know, our main two guys, you know, who've carried us a lot in the past. But, you know, at the same time, we need them healthy. We don't want them to rush back and make it even worse. You know, we hope they get healthy and can be ready for this, you know, final stretch here.
You can't worry about who's going to play. You got to worry about who you got out there right then and there, and just go rock out. That's the main thing right now, but just try to get our minds right. As long as guys keep trying to play hard, that's the best you can ask for. But understanding that task at hand, we still got a chance, but it's coming down to the wire.
That's Pau Gasol, Doug McDermott, and Taj Gibson following the loss to Portland, saying, yeah, it's tough, but with all these injuries, you know, no excuses. You just got to go out there, give it your all, play with the guys you have, and hopefully we'll get some guys back down the stretch. And Coach Fred Hoiberg offered up his opinion on the pretty significant injuries.
It's tough. I mean, I'd be lying if I told you differently, but, you know, I think you guys are getting an opportunity. I think when we do get our guys back, and hopefully we'll get them back here soon, if we can keep the same type of movement, you know, we're going to have a chance to win some games here down the stretch. You know, but it is what it is right now.
Let me just point out, for fun, that you would never, ever hear Tom Thibodeau say those words. I'm not going to lie to you, it's tough. Fred Hoiberg admitting willingly that the absences of Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler, Nico Mirotic, Joakim Noah, yeah, it's tough. And you know what? It is tough, but you would never hear Tom Thibodeau say that. What did he always say? Those three magic words. We have enough. Even when that was clearly not the case, and right now that is very much so not the case. The Bulls do not have enough. But even in recent seasons, under the rule, the Tom Thibodeau iron fist rule, he always said, we have enough, and he always believed it. He always believed it, and you'd never would hear those words come out of his mouth. Not even something as on the fence and not really blaming injuries. Hoiberg wasn't blaming injuries. He just said, yeah, it's tough. You wouldn't even hear Tibbs admit to that being tough. Hey, we have enough. Hey, we have enough. But Rose and Butler both being out, it's brutal. There's, you know, no two ways about it. That is a big gaping hole in your offensive production. Two leaders of this team. So what is the deal with these two guys? Well, Hoiberg had updates on Rose and Butler at practice at shoot-around before their game against Portland. Here's the Rose update.
We did this in full court conditioning, a lot of shooting drills. He got through a lot of it, but again, he got pretty sore at the end and still isn't able to explode off that leg, so just not quite ready yet. That hamstring tendon is where it is, so it's pretty localized there. He's got some other general soreness, but you know, that's the issue right now is when he tries to explode off that, he gets a pretty good pain in that area.
Oh my God, general soreness. Those two words are just torturing Bulls fans right now. General soreness. Look, when Rose sat out that first game, because of general soreness or hamstring tendonitis or whatever they're calling it now. It was a belief by many to be, okay, this is just one of those days, one of those games where Rose needs a rest. He's still trying to get back into shape, and he's playing on two bad knees, and he just, you know, he needs a day off. And then it was two games, and now it's three games. And, I mean, comparing it to years past, Rose is still, I mean, he is playing in way more games this season than he played in the previous three seasons combined. Like, that's already happened. And we're just now getting into March. He's eclipsed those totals. But even still, right when he seemed to be hitting his stride, those games in early February when he was averaging 20 points, he was aggressive, driving to the hole, he was dishing out assists, he was picking up the pace, getting the ball across the court quicker like Fred Hoiberg wanted. Everything started to seem to be clicking and running on high cylinders for Rose, and then general soreness, out. I'm going to sit out again. He's out again. It's just frustrating. Anytime Bulls fans start to maybe think, hey, this looks like Derrick Rose. That game against the Lakers, Kobe said, hey, that looked like Derrick Rose. And it did. One step forward, two steps back. What about Jimmy Butler?
You know, he's chomping at the bit to get back out there. He's excited to get back on the floor. And again, now it's just a matter of getting him right and making sure mentally he's ready to get back out there and compete, where he's not out there thinking and worried about the leg, just going out and playing and reacting.
Okay, so Jimmy Butler, the MRI he got over the weekend revealed progress with his knee sprain, and he is theoretically on track to make his return at the end of that initial estimate of 4 weeks. 4 weeks from when he went out would be March 8th, give or take. So we're looking at a Butler return in a week, maybe 10 days, judging on how things go in practice, when he gets into full five-on-five scrimmages, which the Bulls would obviously welcome Jimmy back with open arms. And if in the meantime we're just wondering what the hell is going on with Derrick Rose, like, the Bulls need one of those two guys. And I'm not talking for a deep playoff run, because that's not going to happen, but to just avoid being completely demoralized, the other guys that are on the floor every night, you need one of those guys to lead the way. Ideally, you have both. Don't give me the crap about, oh, can they play together? And, you know, it'll be a question mark when Butler comes back if this ball movement we've seen recently sticks. If he tones down the ice ball that he has loved to play so far this season, and if the ball keeps moving when Butler's back. But don't give me this Rose and Butler. No. Ideally, they have them both, okay? But, and that right there is, and this, you know, this has been talked to death, so I'll just mention it briefly. Hoiberg said that Butler is chomping at the bit to get back. And I believe that. I believe that it's driving Jimmy Butler crazy, sitting on the bench watching the Bulls struggle like this. The overarching theme of Derrick Rose's career since the initial ACL injury, what makes him lose fans left and right here in Chicago and all over, is that he never seems to care that he's missing these games. And it's perhaps just the way he handles himself in front of the media. He's never backed down when people kind of pressure him with questions of, are you going to try and get back soon? Or, you're just resting now, but come playoff time, you're going to go, right? And even recently, the most recent questions he's taken, he said, you know, regular season, playoffs, whatever, I'm going to listen to my body, and I'm not going to be on that floor unless I feel 100% up to it. And that's what's been driving Bulls fans crazy for years now. Jimmy Butler chomping at the bit to get back. Derrick Rose, we don't know. Hamstring tendonitis. General soreness. Thought he might miss a game. Now it's three. Will he play tomorrow? What's going on? It's just all a pathetic mess. And the Pistons won last night, and that pulled them into a virtual tie with the Bulls and the Hornets for seeds 7, 8, and 9. 2.5 games up on the Bulls are the Miami Heat, who sit currently in fourth in the Eastern Conference. And guess who we're playing tomorrow? The Miami Heat. Now, the Bulls could miss the playoffs altogether. That is still possible. The Wizards are, I think, a game and a half or maybe two games back of Detroit. Detroit, Chicago, Charlotte, all tied 7-8-9. The Bulls could fall out of the playoffs if Butler's return is stalled, if Rose, for whatever reason, needs a quadruple MCL surgery. That could happen. Or, for some crazy reason, they continue to move the ball well. Jimmy Butler returns on time, helps his teammates play some lick of defense, and they leapfrog a couple people, and who knows? Hell, maybe the Bulls are the four seed and have home court advantage in a first-round playoff series. Both of those things are completely possible. Who knows? To use one of Derrick Rose's favorite two-word phrases, who the hell knows? That's four. One thing's for sure, I just have very little sympathy for the Bulls team right now, regardless of what happens.
Golly gee, a single tear rolls down my cheek.
All the issues I've had with management that I've loudly spoken out about, especially the things that came and did not go at the trade deadline a couple weeks ago, there's plenty of blame pointed there, but most of the time when you watch this Bulls team play, they just don't seem to give a shit. They don't seem to have any fun. Hoiberg seems to be in way over his head. This season has just been a bummer from start to finish. Where will they finish? Who knows? Let's take one more quick timeout. We'll be back to talk about the best thing in the NBA right now, and that is Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors. Is it time to quit with the criticism about Curry and his game and embrace his greatness after that performance he had against the Thunder on Saturday? Kind of hard to say anything bad about that three-point magician. 347-327-9183 is the number. You're listening to Chi-Town Chatter with Matt Peck on Blog Talk Radio.
All right, well, gentlemen, I want to jam it with you. Well, gentlemen, gentlemen, and I hope you like jamming too.
It's 3 hours till dinner and I'm starving. So hungry I could eat a horse. Covered in milk, chocolate, peanuts, caramel, and nougat. Whoa! Hold your horses. What I really need is a Snickers, packed to the max with peanuts and caramel. Snickers really satisfies.
25,000 mornings, give or take, is all we humans get. We spend them on treadmills, spend them in traffic. And if we get lucky, really lucky, it dawns on us to go spend them in a world where a simple sunrise can still be magic. 25,000 mornings. Make sure some of them are pure Michigan. Your trip begins at Michigan.org.
Hey, it's me, Water. Did you know that if you filter me from your tap, I'm pretty much the same as I am in a plastic bottle? Except that I'm 10 times cheaper. Other than that, I'm pretty similar. Oh, and I'm fresher when I'm filtered. And I don't need an expiration date. And I don't have to get shipped halfway around the world. But other than that, we're pretty much the same. Pure Water Filter. A better source.
You can tell everybody. You can tell everybody, go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man.
Welcome back to Chi-Town Chatter with Matt Peck on Blog Talk Radio, hanging out with you Monday evening. Happy Leap Day. March is right around the corner, Chicago. It's time to think spring. We actually got some pretty warm weather Saturday and Sunday. However, it was nothing like the fire that Steph Curry was throwing in OKC.
They do have a timeout. They're trying not to use it. Curry, way downtown. Bang! Bang!
That's ABC's Mike Breen on call. Steph Curry's deep three, 38 and a half feet deep, just pulled up, shot it like it was nothing. And really, didn't everyone in the building, didn't everyone watching at home on TV, didn't everyone know it was going in? I knew it was going in as soon as he pulled up. I was like, oh, well, that's clean look. Inside 40 feet, yeah, that's money. Despite the fact that the Thunder seemed to be in control of this game from wire to wire, they just couldn't quite close the door. Kevin Durant had a costly turnover in the final seconds of regulation that led to a frenzy of passes, tipped balls. Andre Iguodala comes down with it and goes up for a shot. Kevin Durant then fouls Iguodala as the buzzer sounds, and then Andre has the stones to go to the free throw line and make two free throws. He needed both of them to tie this game, send it to overtime. And then shortly into overtime, less than a minute into OT, Kevin Durant fouled out. He had had a monster game, 35, 37 points, something like that. And then the Thunder are without KD for the majority of overtime. And then Curry did, well, that. Look, Steph Curry's stats have been ridiculous all season. He's already won the MVP. He might be the first unanimous MVP winner ever. Even MJ never won an MVP unanimously. Every single vote. If that doesn't happen this year, like, who are you voting for? LeBron? Come on. Look at his shots this season. Look at his shooting percentage. DeMarcus Cousins, monster year with Sacramento. That team is shit. Steph Curry's the MVP. Done deal. Now, these stats are some interesting combination of things that Steph did it in that game against the Thunder and what he's done recently. 46 points in that game on Saturday, 12 of 16 from downtown. 12 made threes, tied the NBA record. Only Kobe Bryant and, for some hilarious reason, Donyell Marshall have hit that many threes in one game. The first and only player in NBA history to have back-to-back games hitting 10 or more three-pointers. Because, you know, he did it in their previous game, too. Why not? He hit 10. Only one in NBA history, back-to-back games with 10 threes. He broke his own record for threes in a season in this game. He now has 288. He also is second and third on that list of most threes in a season. 286 last season, 272 in the 2012-2013 season. 288 beating his own record, and there are 24 games left to play. This guy is insane. It was also his fifth career game with 10 or more three-pointers. No one else in NBA history has more than three. He's got five, and he's 27. It was also his third consecutive 40-point game, 46, 51, and 42, his three last scoring totals. And the most impressive thing about all of this, the three straight with 40-plus, the back-to-back games with 10 threes, hitting 12 threes, 46, the buzz, all of this came on the road. We all know that Golden State is dominant at home. They have not lost at home this season. But they have actually lost to some mediocre teams on the road when they just so happen to have an off night. And we're going to come back to that thought of having an off night. But the fact that Curry has done all of this on the road, I mean, what else can you say about the guy?
This guy is unfucking believable.
Now, before the love fest continues for Steph Curry tonight, I must say first, how did OKC not press Steph Curry on that final possession? Yeah, he was 38 feet away. Who cares? So what? You know, if you have watched, any Warriors game for the last 2 years, that Steph Curry does not have the range of a normal player. He does not have a range. He just throws it up and it goes in. Doesn't matter where he is. How do you not press? Especially considering that leading up to that final possession, he had already drilled 11 threes on your team. I don't care if you quintuple team him, make somebody else beat you. You can't give Steph an open look from anywhere past the half court line. You just can't. First year coach Billy Donovan for the Thunder, he must have been freaking out. If he wasn't, he should have been. Just watched five Thunder players not really contest Steph's shot at all. Let him take the ball up the court with no pressure whatsoever. He should have been freaking out like Iceland's coach when he realized that it was not, in fact, Goldberg with the puck, but Kenan Thompson, who was about to unleash the knuckle puck on his ass. The goalie! No! Curry! No! Look, Curry can hit from anywhere. His three-point shooting is the NBA equivalent of Keenan's knuckle puck, okay? You can't stop it. Cannot be stopped. Why did the Thunder let him shoot that? Heck, I mean, even if you have to hack him, hope that for some random stroke of luck, he goes to the free throw line and misses one of his three free throws. It was a tie game at that. Oh, well, I guess it was, so. No, it was a tie game. And then, yeah, so you're not going to give him the free throws. But still, don't let him shoot that game after a week where Steph Curry and the Warriors had heard plenty of criticism. Recently, and really all season long, I mean, namely, if you talk about Charles Barkley, the guy will not stop talking about how Golden State's just a jump-shooting team. And, they're just a jump-shooting team, man. And this, you know, it's not terrible, but they're just not that good, man. And then recently, it was one of the NBA's greatest legends, Oscar Robertson, who was appearing on the Mike and Mike show for ESPN Radio earlier this week. And, well, here's what he had to say about Steph.
Well, you know, he's shot well because of what's going on in basketball today. In basketball today, you know, the game to me is something like, if you can dunk a shoot a three-point shot, you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. There have been some great shooters in the past. And when I played years ago, if you shot a shot out that side and hit, next time I'm going to be up on top of you. I'm going to make maybe press you three-quarters, half-court defense, three-quarters defense. But now they don't do that. You know, that's why I said these coaches do not understand the game of basketball, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, if I got a guy who's great shooting a shot outside, hey, man, that's you want to extend your defense out a little bit?
That's NBA legend Oscar Robertson on the Mike and Mike show earlier this week. Now, and that came before Steph Curry's monster game. So after that criticism of Oscar Robertson saying, hey, it's not that Steph's so great, it's that nobody in the NBA plays defense anymore, Steph's performance on Saturday was probably like, hey, old man.
Hey, old man River, zip it or I'll break your head.
How do you like them apples? 12 threes. Is that good enough for you, Oscar Robertson? But look, Oscar has a point. We have learned now that Steph can shoot from anywhere. He is 11 of 22 this season on shots from further than 30 feet from the basket. He's shooting 50% on shots from 30 or more feet away. And that includes three-quarter, you know, end of quarter buzzer beaters, which he just makes one of those every three or four games. 50% from that deep. LeBron James isn't even shooting 50% from inside the three-point line. Curry is a man and a player all of his own. And he yet still gets this constant criticism. And it's not necessarily he's not good. It's backhanded criticism. It's undercutting of, well, yeah, well, he's good, but he's not the greatest ever. It's this or it's that or these teams from the past would have beat him, or it's the lack of defense that Oscar Robertson was citing. And, well, when Warriors head coach Steve Kerr was asked about trying to stop Steph Curry after the game, he had a pretty salty response.
You guys should ask some of the old-time players. They have a better idea of how to guard Steph. The new coaches do. All of us new coaches have no idea what we're doing.
Steve Kerr taking the opportunity to take a little jab at some of the critics of Steph Curry and his Warriors and their style of play. He followed it up, though, with, I'm just kidding.
You know, I'm joking when I respond with this stuff because it's amusing to all of us. And obviously I have unbelievable respect for all the legends of our league. But, we're just having fun with it. And that's what we should do. This was not a response to anything. This was just an incredible second half effort, team effort, and another ridiculous shooting performance from Steph.
That's Warriors head coach Steve Kerr saying, hey, you know, I respect the greats. They are, you know, they built the foundation for the NBA that we have now. But you know what? This is a new age of NBA we're playing. And my MVP, my point guard, my star, Steph Curry, and the rest of the guys that are around him, we're a pretty damn good basketball team. So we hear all this criticism coming our way, and we just laugh at it. It really is funny to hear all these old guys rant about Steph and the Warriors not being great. It's like, oh, the Warriors are overrated. Oh, well, you know, Sonny, back in my day, the NBA was blah, blah.
I don't like things now compared to the way they used to be. All this progress, phony! In my day, we didn't have these cash machines that would give you money when you needed it. There was only one bank in each state. It was open only 1 hour a year. Line 17 miles long, and the line became an angry mob of people, fornicators and thieves, mutant children and circus freaks. And you waited for years, and by the time you got to the telly, you were senile and arthritic, and you couldn't remember your own name. You were born, got in line, and you died. And that's the way it was, and we liked it. Life was simpler then.
Life was simpler back in the old NBA times. People didn't even believe in a three-point line. People fouled the shit out of each other, and it was a slow, ugly game. But that's the way we liked it. The game is different now. There's no denying that. And look, I have said before, and I've been saying it all season long, I think the NBA is soft. And it's not a think, it is a fact. The NBA is much softer than it was even 20 years ago, 15 years ago. But Steph and the Warriors are the best at what the game has evolved into. What the NBA game has become, the Warriors are the best at it. If you can't stop them, you know what? Shut up. Stop talking. Did mention recently that he's getting a little tired of all the haters and all the criticism from old players or coaches, whoever it is. Even Phil Jackson recently said, Steph Curry, well, he's not the best. And then he threw out two names of guys who played in the NBA for like two or three seasons that nobody even remembers at this point. Phil Jackson, oh, I have something to say about this. Look, Steph Curry is the best shooter in the league. The Warriors are the best team in the league. You can't stop them. Shut up. Although, you know what? If it's pissing Steph Curry off a little bit, good. If the recent stretch of games we've seen from him, three straight with 40-plus, 10 threes made, 12 threes made, buzzer beaters, game-winning shots. If this is, he even tweaked his ankle, looked pretty badly in that game on Saturday, came back from a tweaked ankle and played even better. If this amount of haters is getting to him a little bit to drive him to play even better, that's a good thing for Steph Curry. You know what? Get mad. Get mad if you want to. If that's bringing out these incredible performances we're seeing because you got all sorts of haters and doubters coming your way, embrace that. And by the way, get ready for some F-bombs.
You got to be grateful. You need haters. What the fuck is you complaining about? What the fuck do you think a hater's job is? To fucking hate. So let them motherfuckers do their goddamn job. What the fuck is you complaining about?
Haters gonna hate. Let them. Welcome it. Embrace it. Guys like Michael Jordan, guys like Kobe Bryant, they have embraced haters throughout their careers. And it brought them to some pretty lonely company of some of the best the NBA has ever seen. Now, the Warriors are driving towards a repeat right now, and there's plenty of motivation there. But let the haters drive you too, Steph Curry. You know what? After watching that Warriors-Thunder game on Saturday, I am on board with Curry and Golden State. I mean, I certainly don't hate on them. I have really enjoyed watching them play all season. Coming into this season as well, I guess when we got to, you know, December, early January, and we started to see how many wins this team was stacking up, even before the season began, people were talking about 72-10. And I initially, as a lifelong Bulls fan, a guy who, as a kid, saw MJ and those Bulls have that magical 95-96 season, I didn't want the Warriors to break that record. Because it holds a place in my heart, truly holds a place in my heart. Now, I think I've come to realize that I don't really care. You know, records are meant to be broken. Heck, I hope the Warriors do break it. They are by far and away the best thing about the NBA right now. And I love, yes, the Bulls. You know what else I love? The NBA. And as a Bulls fan who is hopeless and dejected and thought of his team right now, the Warriors are the best show around. And if that means that they're going to break a 72-10 record that the Bulls made what feels like a lifetime ago, good, great, make new history. There's a lot about the current NBA that I don't love, but the Warriors are by far and away the coolest thing about the NBA right now. And if they get to 72, I mean, you know, kudos to them. And they really did propel themselves. They're very likely to break that record now. I mean, if they that would have been lost six if they didn't find a way to come back against OKC on Saturday, and maybe they fall short. But now they still are just at five losses. They don't have an incredibly difficult schedule down the stretch. And if you're not losing to OKC in OKC, I mean, I doubt that they get beaten at home for the rest of the season. What other tough road games remain? Are there six of them? Are there seven of them? There are only, you know, 25 or so games left to play. 24. That would be a pretty significant slump for them to fall short of it. And Steph Curry, after his insane performance Saturday, spoke briefly about chasing those 72 wins.
Haven't talked to Coach Kerr much about it, but I'm pretty sure when they did it, they won games like this where didn't play particularly well all game. The other team, like the Thunder did tonight, had a pretty good showing, but still found a way to claw the way to a victory. So you got to win games like these to get to that mark.
That's Steph Curry after the game, and I told you I'd come back to that thought earlier of the Thunder controlling this game from wire to wire. MJ and the Bulls in 95-96, they won some games they probably had no business winning. Steve Kerr, who was on that team, is now the coach of this Warriors team, and he said to his players, there were some games that really you needed wins when you didn't think you were going to get one or you didn't think you deserved a win. Steve Kerr has said it about that 95-96 team. Bill Wennington, who does radio for the Bulls now, who was on that 95-96 team, said the same thing. There were a dozen or so games that season where Michael Jordan just said, when the Bulls were down, well, this isn't happening. We are not losing to this team, not tonight, not now. I will take over, and I will win us this game. A dozen or so times that happened for the Bulls in that magical season. Just decided, nah, we're going to win this game. We're not going to lose it. Steph just did that on Saturday. The Warriors were outplayed from start to finish. The Thunder were shooting well. Russell Westbrook had a good game. Kevin Durant had a great game. Serge Ibaka was doing his thing. They even got some, you know, key plays from guys like Steven Adams. And they should have won. And the Thunder have for years now been a team that tends to choke away games late. And they did it again Saturday. The turnover by KD, the foul by KD. OKC made some mistakes down the stretch. The Warriors still should have had no business winning that game. Steph just pulled an MJ and said, we're not losing this game. 12 threes. The insane three near the buzzer, 0.6 seconds left. Now, look, I'm not getting into this who's better, MJ or Steph, because please, it's MJ. Six rings, one ring. And regardless of what the Warriors do this season and beyond, if they have their own dynasty. As of right now, maybe this is something he improves upon, but right now, MJ is a way better defender than Steph Curry is. There's no contest there, and it's a two-way sport. So, yes, MJ is still leap years ahead, if you will, of Steph Curry. Doesn't take away from the fact that Steph Curry did something remarkable on Saturday. You have to respect the fact that no one since Michael Jordan, and this is my opinion, no one since MJ, not Kobe Bryant, not LeBron James, not nobody else, makes it look like they are playing a different game than the other nine guys on the floor. The way MJ played, that's what you felt watching it. That's what you thought. Like, gosh, this guy is a different species than the other nine guys on the floor. He just takes over a game, and he makes it look effortless. He's doing things on the floor that nobody else can do. We have not seen that since MJ. We're seeing it now with Steph Curry. The way this guy shoots the ball, he's not playing the same sport. I don't think he's the same species. The guy is incredible. So anybody out there still saying, well, he's not that great. He's not the best shooter I've ever seen. The Warriors aren't that good. If you're an old grump, if you're an ex-coach, if you're a retired player, or if you're a fan who's still not buying the juice that Steph is selling, shut up. You lost your argument on Saturday. Enjoy the frickin' show. Or, you know, if you want, keep hating. Because Steph certainly doesn't seem to mind. That's a wrap. I got to get out of here. We are past the 8 o'clock hour. I'll be back on Wednesday with my reaction to this Bulls Heat game we got on deck tomorrow and a preview of Blackhawks and Red Wings. They're on Wednesday. Nice rivalry renewed for Chicago and Detroit. This has been Chi-Town Chatter with Matt Peck on Blog Talk Radio. Matt Peck saying, hey, you can follow me on Twitter at MMP_DAAA. Like and follow the Facebook page, Chi-Town Chatter with Matt Peck, on Instagram at Chi-Town Chatter. Subscribe to my YouTube channel for all of my sports videos and for all of my podcasts and content. Check out my website, www.chitownchatter.com. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great night. Come on, baby, don't you wanna go? Come on, baby.